What's your favorite Christmas special?
But, you know, it's probably going to be somewhere, you know, I don't know, somewhere either Charlie Brown or the Grinch that stole Christmas, probably.
You know, for me, it's like Rudolph. But yeah. Then when you go back and you take an adult look at the Rudolph show, you start to realize that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer stop-action movie is a little freaky.
I just don't like to make toys.
Now listen, you. You're an elf, and elves make toys. Now get to work. 10 minutes break. Not for you. Finish the job, or you're fired.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and digital patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into a variety of topics on digital tools, solutions, strategies, and processes that are impacting our industry today.
All right, well, that was Jordan Howard from OM Healthcare. And again, we appreciate her willingness to let us use her voice each and every week. And so we'll have a few more that will start showing up. And if you're interested in reading the intro, please, by all means, let us know and we'll give you some instructions on that. So thanks, everybody, for listening. If you have not, please go out to iTunes and subscribe. Rate and review us while you're there. And we appreciate the support. So as always, I am joined by Chris Boyer, a digital strategist for hospitals and healthcare systems around the country. And you can find out more about what he does and what he has to say over at ChristopherBoyer.com, or you can just reach out and follow him online. So at Chris Boyer on most of the social platforms that are out there. And then, of course, LinkedIn and all those good places, you can track him down by his name. It's not too terribly hard to find us. Here we are, episode 44. Chris, welcome.
Hey, Reed, thanks so much. And that is Reed Smith on the other side of the microphone. Reed is a digital strategist, a social media expert. He works with hospitals, health systems, and health-related companies across the country. And much like myself, you can find him online, his website, socialhealthinstitute.com, as well as you can find him on most of the social platforms, at Reed Smith, on Twitter and Instagram and all those other things. And also, you can find him pretty easily on LinkedIn. Reed, I want to congratulate you. I understand that you've been named, I guess, the highest quality workplace just recently.
Oh, yes.
By Crames.
Yes. I didn't know where that was going, but yes, I am the 85th. Best place to work in New York City.
You might want to explain that to some people.
Yeah, so on Twitter, my handle is Reed Smith, just my name, and I've had it for quite some time, obviously. Well, one of the largest law firms in the world is a law firm called Reed Smith. Their Twitter handle is Reed Smith LLP, I believe. I think I've got that right. But at least half dozen times a week, probably at this point, some weeks more than others, I get tagged in tweets referencing the law firm because people just assume, I guess, maybe that would be their Twitter handle. So they just key it in without really checking, which is fine. But I get tagged in a lot of law-related tweets. And occasionally I'll chime in, you know, and things like that. And they're international. So I get a lot of stuff from like London, for example, must be a pretty big office for them, et cetera. But anyway, they, the law firm, not me, the individual, were recognized as the 85th best place to work in New York City or something along those lines. So
congratulations to you.
Yeah.
And congratulations to them.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody's listening, the Twitter handle is for sale. Everything's for sale. So. Before we get too far in, just a quick bit of recognition for one of our sponsors, Loyal Health. The Loyal's AI-driven platform provides health systems with tools needed to amplify patient feedback and guide patients through their digital journey.
Yeah, they have a multidisciplined team of engineers, marketers, data scientists, and they partner with some of the nation's leading health systems to promote patient loyalty through a smarter digital patient experience.
And you've heard Chris and I talk a lot about AI and kind of where some of this stuff is going. And so they've got some really cool stuff happening over at Loyal Health. We encourage you to make your way over to loyalhealth.com if you'd like to learn more and, of course, to schedule a demo. So if you get on the phone with them, tell them we sent you.
They're such great people. I'm surprised that they didn't make that list of the best place to work.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we can claim they did. Well, here we are, episode 44, first episode in December. And so today we're talking something a little bit different. Those that have worked in hospitals obviously understand that there is a thing called quality. Usually it's a department. Usually it's led by people like VP of quality and things like that. But it's probably not something we as healthcare marketers have engaged with, interacted with, participated in maybe through the years. And, you know, we want to talk a little about how maybe some of that's changing.
First of all, for those healthcare marketers that are not aware that there's quality at your hospital, you may want to look around you and see if this is the right place for you to work. But, you know, quality measurements are things that drive a lot of how organizations kind of view themselves, how they improve their processes. And it ultimately impacts, obviously, the bottom line and things like that. What I found is to be interesting is a lot of times when I'm working within, when I've worked within a hospital system, we had our personal LEMS, right? Our own goals that were aligned to quality measurements that we had to align into our digital marketing goals. So quality, patient experience, et cetera. So there is a connection, but oftentimes it's a little bit far reaching, so to speak.
Yeah. And some of the stuff you're doing probably fits in that realm. And we'll get to that here in a little bit because you may not be thinking about it that way. But before we get too far, like we always do, let's maybe define, if we could, what do we mean by quality, and more specifically, quality measures? Because I think that's really kind of where it gets to the interface, if you will, to marketing, to digital specifically. So pulled a definition from CMS. So this is actually from CMS.gov. Quality measures are tools that help us measure or quantify the healthcare process. So outcomes, patient perception, organizational structure, and or systems that are associated with the ability to provide high quality healthcare and or that relate to one or more quality goals for healthcare. So things like effectiveness, safety, efficiency, patient-centered, equitable, timely care.
Hats off for you finding that, navigating through the CMS.gov website, because that's really hard sometimes to get information from. Yeah. But as we look at, you know, these quality measures and we apply it to healthcare, it's not surprising that there are very robust ways that organizations are tracking their quality. There are a number of different types of measurements that have been kind of standardized over the years that people are using for internal benchmarks, for internal scorecards on their performance.
I think that dividing line, and we've talked about this as it relates to other departments, whether it's IT&S or whatever, but I think historically we call it marketing, but it's advertising. You know, and you could probably make a case for community relations, maybe public relations, public affairs. So we're dealing with the media, all good stuff, and all definitely part of the equation. But I think less has been about the operations, the internal workings of the hospital, and marketing being part of those conversations.
Some content marketing efforts that we do, we know that it aligns or butts against patient communication and patient education. And some of the patient education goals, some of those ways to maybe proactively share health information to their to the community aligns with quality measurements. And so there is starting now very, you know, very loosely, maybe on the fringes of what we do for a marketing perspective, we are starting to get involved in quality marketing, so to speak.
If you look at, you know, the role that quality plays in the hospital. So obviously, you know, we're wanting to make sure people have a good experience. And that means a lot of things to a lot of different people. And so unless, you know, you've said this, I've heard other people say this, but it's really hard to manage what you can't measure. Did I say that right? Is that how you say
that?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of these things have been now identified and there's measurements put against them. And that's how we determine, are we good or not? What hospital should you go to for what types of things? So, again, another link to another article. This one is from the Agency for Health Healthcare Research and Quality, which is part of the Health and Human Services, HSS. But they've got a list of examples of hospital quality measures for consumers. So the first big bucket there is patient safety. You know, how safe am I going to be if I go to this particular hospital? And so, you know, some of the common things underneath there are like falls, surgical complications, infections, mortality rates,
But there's an intersect here to digital, which is interesting, right? It's the use of the electronic systems for entering medication orders. Mm-hmm. The belief is using patient portals, or EHRs, I should say, really,
right,
to keep track of this. You know, there are also effectiveness measures, Reed. We're looking at the percentage of patients that are receiving recommended care for specific conditions. And this is where you're looking at the sort of the quality process and making sure that there's not a high case of recidivism, or there's a lot of preventative care that's occurring during that whole care path, right? And prevention of surgical infections when they're actually after surgery. These are things too that are measurements that we're using.
Another measurement is around patient centeredness. So patient reports the care and services they receive from the hospital. That's a pretty common one that we probably already know about. There's a lot of ways, I guess, patients report on the care they receive. But most specifically, you know, you're looking at things, everything from HCAHPS to just consumer rating and review sites, et cetera, are starting to come kind of into that fold.
Well, and that also includes discharge instructions.
Sure.
And that relates a lot to the next category, which is like timeliness measures, which is reporting on the timeliness of care and the services they receive from a hospital. Really, that's really focusing on delivering the right information to the right people at the right time. I deliberately said it that way because doesn't that sound like what personalized marketing
is? Yeah, isn't that what we're doing or want
exactly
to do or think we're doing? You know, what about efficiency? So you got efficiency measures, you know, average length of stay, hospital discharge rate. So things about, are we being effective, putting everything in place and getting people through the hospital and home or discharged in the appropriate amount of time? You know, how efficient are we at our jobs?
That's a lot of internal facing measurements.
Sure.
But it's very important to the patient experience. The last category is not really necessarily an IOM domain. It's the equity measures. Measures that convey the hospital's capacity for providing quality of care and service.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, like the number of beds and types of services available, whether the hospital is accredited.
Yep.
Or has a specialty certification.
Yep.
Again, using patient medical records and prescription ordering systems. And even, you know, percentage of doctors who are board certified and nurse-to-patient staffing ratios.
You know, the nurse-to-patient staffing ratio is an interesting one because not only is it on this side of the equation, it's also on the recruitment side. Even from a marketing standpoint, talking about how attractive it is to come work at our organization, of course, you're going to talk about things like we have the beach and we have this amenity and this big lake. You know, the school district's amazing and we have something for your spouse to do when you move here. And so, I mean, we're trying to attract these in-demand, whether it's nursing, allied health, even physicians. But that's an interesting one from a nursing perspective. That's one thing people want to know about, especially as the acuity goes up. Am I working a step-down unit or telemetry, ICU, et cetera? What's the nurse-to-patient ratio?
For a second there, when you said we had the beach, I was thinking that was a hospital and that was sort of an amenity for patients. And my mind went a whole different place there. But you know, we have a beach and a pool. Come on by our hospital.
Yeah. We have an indoor beach. And we have, yeah.
What's interesting about this, and it's been said before, I think one of our interviewers, one of the persons we've interviewed before has said this, where he says, healthcare, we spend a lot of time measuring what we do and how effective we're doing things.
Mm.
Yet, oftentimes, we struggle with making that data or the measurements effective. And so we kind of lack the intelligence to shift our processes and procedures. Now, the person that was saying that was talking about marketing in healthcare. But, you know, quite frankly, if you flash back maybe, you know, 30, 40 years when quality measurements were started new in hospitals, they were probably in the same place where they were able to measure all of these things, but they were really trying to track to see how this actually translates to better care and to the better experience for their patients.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. Well, all right. So, we've talked about quality measures. We've talked about more specifically, what are some of those actual things? What are we actually measuring, like discharge and, you know, et cetera? We start looking at, well, you know, marketing's involvement. You know, what does that look like? You know, how can we be involved in this space? I think we're maybe overlooking some of the places that we've historically are already involved. And so we've got a couple of those that just come to mind right offhand, which is like ER wait times. We've put those on billboards and on the website and maybe even mobile apps and things like that for quite some time. quite some time as it relates to healthcare marketing, I should say. And so that's one. I mean, that is a quality metric. That is something that probably historically folks pored over, met about, talked about from an internal team standpoint for a while, and marketing wasn't in the room. And then it was like, ooh, we should make them publicly accessible, I guess. And that's kind of when marketing came into the equation.
Well, that's because they're useful and interesting to their patients that are consuming this information online, or they're trying to make a decision about where to go.
Right.
Now, I mean, it might be arguable. There's been studies that show back and forth about whether ER wait times are actually guiding people to a particular point of care,
right?
Based on the wait time. But I still would say that just by the mere fact that an organization starts to publish their wait times on the website, that act of transparency is of interest. And when I was at a hospital way back when in DC, in the DC area, when we published ER wait times, we did an anecdotal survey because our ER wait time page was probably one of the most highly trafficked web pages on our website at the time. And we asked people, anecdotally again, if they were using that to guide them to care. And they said no, but they like having that web page up and watching the wait times fluctuate over the day.
That's interesting. I think this leads you into a couple different things, which is the ability to schedule or wait from home, make decisions on care in some way, shape, or form. So, I mean, are people making decisions based off of that ER wait time? Probably not, but I think we are seeing some things because ER is pretty episodic, obviously. You're Googling a lot, right? And now we're seeing Google starting to push ER wait times into your search ranking listing. Mm-hmm. So we've got the ability to now display our ER wait time in that search result. It must be relevant to somebody.
It is relevant to Google, at least, and so therefore it's relevant to all of us, right?
a little bit along those lines are obviously rating and review sites. So again, getting that feedback from the consumer, and then what do you do with it, I guess, is probably really the bigger question. Bringing that information back into the organization, especially from a thematic standpoint. Is everybody talking about billing? Is everybody talking about the wait time? Is everybody talking about the type of care they receive? Do we have people by name that are showing up in these reviews, good or bad or indifferent? Understanding what the tone of that is and what we can do with it.
That's probably the most important part, right? Is what we can do with it. The intention here of Baldrige and others, other of these accreditations, are the fact that we're responsive to seeing where there are fluctuations in quality, and we're trying to respond and address them in order to improve the ultimate quality outcome. It's not just the old days where you get a 5-star for cardiac. Now what you're doing is you're being reactive and being able to address and respond, and that's a big component of quality measurements.
A little, newer on the agenda than ER wait times, for example. We started hearing a lot, and I guess seeing a lot of people that are taking into account what would fall under the bucket of transparency, I guess. Initially, this was a few years ago where you saw folks like the University of Utah being the first one, but putting HCAHPS scores on their physician profiles online. Taking something that already existed, that historically only lived, I say only lived, it lived in that quality space, and actually making that accessible to consumers. So again, we've talked about consumerism in recent weeks, patient experience, we talk about on a pretty regular basis. And so this is kind of one of those things that, this is how marketing is getting involved.
More so, it's really interesting is when we started to publish these quality scores on websites, these HCAHPS scores, we found that consumers really utilized them to help them in the selection process for providers. This is a great example of where a quality measurement, something that is traditionally very back end and used to improve internal processes, was exposed to the public, and now it's part of the consumeristic decision path, right? It's a selection journey. We're finding that, the more we start to expose quality measurements to the external world, that some resonate well, and some of them actually are very useful to people making selections about where they're going to seek out their care.
On the flip side of that, it created a certain amount of accountability for physicians. I think there's studies out there of how HCAHPS scores went up after they became public, across an organization. You increase accountability. You also increase the ability for consumers on the other side of the coin to find the care that they need. We've seen that starting to bleed into pricing. Pricing transparency. So, I mean, I know these some of those tools have existed for a lot of years. They weren't very good, but you know, I know from some of the different social properties that we manage for hospitals across the country, a pretty common question we get is, or see come through, is what is the cash price for, and then fill in the blank. It's usually something, I'll stop short of saying elective, it's usually like around childbirth, for example, something they know is coming that they're planning for. And a lot of times you see this from hospitals that maybe border, like on the southern border, for example. You know, people want to drive over from Mexico because the care is better in the States. And they want to know what the cash price is, for example. So anyway, pricing transparency is an interesting one because we've talked about this a lot, but hospitals are obviously one of those places, healthcare is one of those places that there's not a menu, so to speak.
There are menus. I mean, there are books that actually carry the pricing, but you know, it varies with each insurance. It's very hard to do. It's a difficult equation to calculate. However, I think it's critically important. You mentioned people going over the border. Reed, I work for some hospitals that actually engage in medical tourism where they're trying to attract people from other countries.
Yep.
And that's another place where you want to have your pricing transparent. And some of it's for elective, but some of it not. Prostate surgery, for example, would be one of those that I actually worked on, some medical tourism. And pricing became a big forefront of that. The thing is about pricing, too, when I worked in New York, it was regulated by the government that we had to start publishing pricing information on all of our hospital websites. I mean, and that's one of many states in the country that are enforcing that you need to publish at least some kind of guidance around pricing. Right.
Yeah, we've done that for some clients based off of a regulatory piece. It's like, hey, we've got to have this on the site. Some of them have more of a tool that does that, you know, so it's almost like linking out to a portal to some degree. Right. Some of them, it's not quite as sophisticated. But I did come across something when I was looking around, and we'll again link to this because I think this is a pretty neat little toolkit, but it's from the American Hospital Association, from AHA, and it's Achieving Price Transparency for Consumers, a Toolkit for Hospitals. And so it has, you know, obviously introductory piece, action items, things like that, and then some additional resources. One of the things that's in there, though, which I thought was kind of neat, and it may give you something that you can just kind of rattle through, but is a self-assessment. How ready are you to go down this path? And if you look at that self-assessment, you know, it talks about, you know, secret shoppers and some of those types of things, which you could argue might live in another department of the hospital. But there are some things on here about, are you making available this information in other languages that are most often used in your community? Okay, well, maybe that's in digital, maybe it's not, or maybe it's in marketing, maybe it's not. But then you start going through and you see things like, is it accessible via your website immediately upon request? So not just a form somebody fills out and eventually they may get something from somebody, like, can someone access this information on your website or not? There are some very black and white things in here in this assessment around marketing.
You know, it's only going to be a matter of time before Google is going to want to start to prefer pricing as well when they look at hospitals. I mean, we're not there yet. Consumerism certainly is driving this price transparency conversation. Much like they do today when you Google for a product, it shows up and Google has its own little portal, I forgot what it's called, where they try to sell products and they show the pricing across multiple different online retailers. Wouldn't that be something like in the future where you have you Google and it shows you the price for joint replacement surgery across all the hospitals in your market?
Right. That'd be crazy. Yeah. It's like you plug in your what insurance you have in your zip code and, you know, here's the cheapest place, and you could sort. Here's the cheapest place. Now I'm giving somebody an idea for a website, but here, you know, here's the cheapest place you can go. Here's the ones with the highest quality or the best outcomes, and you know, here's the one with the best outcome and the cheapest price. And that's that whole consumerism piece, right?
But that's not a new idea to create websites like that. There are many companies that have done that. They've famously, even here in the Twin Cities area where I live, that have gone out there in a very aggressive way from a statewide perspective, try to publish pricing transparency. But I think they were before their time. And there's some nuance to it as well, because it's, you know, what is your copay, but based on your insurance, there's, you could get like this rough price range And I've done that before where I've worked at organizations where it said, you know, having a baby can range from anywhere from, you know, $2,000 to $7,000. And that's kind of a wide range, right? That's just an example. I'm not sure if that's the exact price, by the way. Don't quote me on that for those of you who know.
don't show up there and be like, well, I heard this on a podcast.
Exactly. Price transparency can really impact not only how consumers make a choice in where they seek out their care and deciding whether to cross over to state lines to another city, a neighboring city, or all that. When you think about price sensitivities around health insurance and around what more and more of that is being assumed out of pocket by the healthcare consumer, that becomes really top of mind. Hey, we want to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors, and that's our good friends at Binary Fountain.
You know, as a healthcare marketer, it's probably pretty obvious these days how much time you're spending on reviews, ratings relative to hospitals, physicians, all that kind of good stuff. You know, too many of those are going unanswered, and they're certainly not being analyzed.
This could be costing us new and current customers. It could be impacting our patient experience scores and potentially impacting our revenue. Luckily, our good friends at Binary Fountain have an online reputation management platform called Binary Health Analytics.
If you'd like to learn more or even schedule a demo, visit them online at binaryfountain.com. That's binaryfountain.com. All this kind of leads you down this path, or this particular piece does, I guess, about putting it on your website. Because that's our logical outlet to inform people with. Because this stuff has to live somewhere. Now, it doesn't mean you can't link to it from social. It doesn't mean you can't have other avenues into the data. How do you alert people that that exists? How do you make sure they can find it? We've got organizations out there that are going down this path. You know, one that comes to mind for me here in Texas is THR, Texas Health. They're up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Mm-hmm. And on their website, and we'll link to this, they have a whole section of their website around quality and patient safety. And they have, why are they doing this? The guiding principles, their commitment, all those types of things, even a glossary. This gets into joint commission accreditation, which again, we'll kind of touch on that here in a minute. Patient safety, et cetera. Even information about their chief medical officers, quality reporting by third parties. And they're putting scores on their physician profiles and all that kind of good stuff like we've talked about. But you go into like inpatient core measures and you're going to get a PDF document with a whole bunch of scores on it and stuff. And I don't know, you know, by they have a bunch of hospitals. Are people going in and looking at that?
I think there are certain people, consumers, patients that might find that very interesting. And I find that refreshing that they're actually publishing that information. It's how you frame it, how often you update it too, that makes it relevant to people. I think that referring physicians might find a lot of value in that information because then they could say, oh, this they seem to have a really good program for the specialty. And they may not have an affiliation with you before or may not typically refer there. The more you start promoting this information online, it may give them that valuable information. What's also interesting too, when you start to look at payer negotiations, when the managed care goes in for their contracts, if they start to look at all of this quality data on the site, you could say, look, our length of stays are down. You could point to your quality measures in a very transparent way to help negotiate better pricing with the local insurance providers. That sort of level of transparency, that means a lot. Will it affect the way I choose my care, which hospital I go to for care? I'm not really sure. That there's a little nuance to that. But just by the mere fact that they're publishing, their quality outcomes, it actually makes me feel better that they feel comfortable enough to publish it, because that's like a step forward for transparency. And transparency is honesty in my mind.
Yeah, I even look at transparency in the if we're responding to ratings and reviews online and we're putting someone's actual name and direct phone number in the response, a fair amount of transparency are taking even some of those small steps of like, well, don't just give them the main number to the hospital. Like, give them somebody to connect with and give them their actual information, because we don't have anything to hide. And so this is that next one, right? If you look at this THR website in this whole section, they list out their chief medical officers at all the different hospitals. Their willingness to take this step, regardless of what the score or how it may look, says a lot. We mentioned Joint Commission a minute ago. Maybe let's touch on that. Like all hospitals do, there is a reason you have to link you know, you have to have a certain blurb on your website about the Joint Commission and how people right. can contact the Joint Commission if they have issues, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
So a lot of people that work in hospitals know when, you know, all of a sudden there's like fire drill because they're doing a Joint Commission survey to evaluate if you're at the level of where they see what these regulatory measures are. That's the survey. And usually that survey takes a couple of days mm-hmm. and they happen unannounced. So all of a sudden it's all hands on deck.
Yeah. And right? Yeah. It's unannounced. And there's usually, what is it? Is there a mid-cycle survey or something? And that one is yeah. announced and it's kind of like a practice test or a trial run, you know, kind of a deal. You know, they check in mid-cycle, so to speak.
I think a lot of organizations also see a Joint Commission accreditation is sort of like a badge of honor, and they also put that on their own public websites. And I know many hospitals that I work with have indicated that they're Joint Commission along these different service lines right. in different areas.
Right.
It's like a very prestigious accreditation or award that can be received by an organization. But also, you know, working in hospitals for a very long time, I see Joint Commission all over. It's almost become now, to me, as an outsider, I would say, well, of course they're Joint Commission accredited. It's kind of like board certification, mm-hmm. right? Everybody should be Joint Commission certified, right?
Well, I would hope so. What we've talked about to this point has been all external facing, you know, to the consumer, the people that are coming in and consuming healthcare. There are a couple of others, the Magnet Journey being one, Nurse Friendly being another. Some of these designations more around your workplace staff that those looking for a job are going to put a lot of weight into. If they know, so much like Joint Commission, if you understand that that's kind of the good housekeeping seal of approval, is this the like, okay, cool, I'll go anywhere that's Magnet or anywhere that's Nurse Friendly or anywhere, you know, some of those things are really important to how you create a culture at your organization.
But Magnet Journey is a recognition from the American Nursing Credentialing Center. That's related to organizations that have demonstrated an enrollment of environment of excellence from nursing practices and patient care. So it's really focusing on the nurse staff, right, and how well the nurses mm-hmm. are doing. And a big part of that is making sure you're creating an environment where nurses are staying top of their profession. They're getting a lot of communication. Information is cascading through the organization very quickly, and that's translated to how the care is actually delivered. One of the key critical parts of Magnet certification is just that communication. And so, Reed, let me tell you a little story about a hospital I worked with where we actually created a blog that actually supported the nursing journey. As with every one of these designations, there's some structure and some rigor around it. We created a blog that was a nursing-focused blog where we used digital marketing tools to communicate to nurses. Got all nurses signed up to an email or a syndication of anytime something's updated on the blog, they would get an email about it. The chief nursing officer and the nursing staff and the people on the Magnet staff actually use the blog as its primary way to communicate to nurses throughout the Magnet journey. They shared information. They had various different sections, one about continuous learning, another about best practices, etc. And it was very much transparent. And by the way, consumers could find it online mm-hmm. if they searched. It wasn't like prominently linked on the website, but it was out there because, you know, quite frankly, why is that bad? You're sharing best practices and you're showing a commitment from your organization to the nursing staff. It was a really great use case of how digital tools, blogs in this case, would work very, very great to the nursing staff who don't like to go to like the intranet when they're off hours.
There's a lot of evolution in this space. And I think when we talk about all this, it's, you know, how do we not get siloed on advertising? You know, specifically service line advertising. Again, you need to do that, and that's a good thing, and, you know, that won't necessarily go away. But there's so many other parts of the organization you can participate in. You know, we've mentioned many of those already, and maybe we can kind of cap this off a little bit with talking about Baldrige. And our interview today is with a guy named Dave Thompson, former Senior Vice President of Quality for one of the divisions within HCA here in Austin, actually. And I've known him for some years because part of that division was St. David's Healthcare here in Austin. A really, really interesting guy that's been in that role for a long time. He's out on his own consulting now, but took St. David's specifically through the Baldrige journey. In recent years, we've seen the evolution of some of this questioning to start involve social media and digital marketing specifically, like calling it out. Not like you could draw a loose conclusion that like, ooh, we could use this as part of our answer. Like it's literally asking in some of these sections specifically about social media. And so that's a change in the last few years. And so we talk a little bit about that in this interview, but I thought because the Baldrige Award is something that hospitals are considering, no one wins it the first time out kind of a thing. So this is a multi-year process. Obviously, it is an award, but the idea is how are you bettering the organization? There are a number of kind of categories in there, one being senior leadership. And it's specifically asking there now. Now, again, if you applied for this back in 2000, it wouldn't have asked this. And so now these are real concrete examples of how you as a marketing individual, as a marketing professional, can start participating in some different conversations around the organization. So in category one, which has to do with senior leadership, there's a specific question in there, a specific question about how senior leaders are having two-way conversations with patients and workforce through the effective use of social media. The hard part about that is like, oh, yeah, we've got a Twitter account. It's like, no.
Right.
No. Right. How are senior leaders effectively using social media to communicate with patients and the workforce? Mm-hmm. And I would guess that a lot of people are going to have to go, they're not. But anyway, so that's an interesting one. You know, the one where we originally saw it was in category three, which is voice of the customer. And it's, you know, specifically asking about things like social media and how you're using social media and web-based technologies to listen to patients and customers. And then how are you using that information that comes in to better a process? Because that's the whole piece of Baldrige. How are you getting information in? How are you systematically understanding that data? And how are you improving a process?
Now, when you're talking about this, is how are you using social media to enhance the patient experience and patient outcomes? That is pretty significant.
So here's the hard part. So you start reading through these questions, and parts of the application mm-hmm. have to do with measurement and results and all these types of things and benchmarking. So there's all these things, right? The problem with the application, and not the problem, but the problem you're going to run into is the overall application, like the entire thing that you turn in is a defined amount of pages. Like you can't exceed X, I don't remember the number, 50 pages, 60 pages, whatever it is, for the entire application. And there's seven sections. So you then sort of have to figure out, okay, well, how do I distill this down? Where are we getting information? And then how are we aggregating that information? And what are we doing with it? You've got to be able to tell that story.
It seems like it's coming full circle. You know, we talk a lot on digital marketing. How do we get information from them? How do we communicate effectively? And how do we get their feedback, that 360-degree feedback? And it seems like quality is undergoing the same transformative changes in the same way, in that we're starting to get feedback from patients and using the same channels that we do from a marketing perspective to get that feedback to improve our quality scores.
The point of doing all that is so you have the ability to be better as an organization. Hey, Chris, before we go too much further, jump into this next segment of the podcast, I did want to mention and thank one of our sponsors, Influence Health. You know, they've got a consumer experience platform that covers several things. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we've talked about content management systems on this podcast.
Yeah, we did.
What about CRMs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we covered CRMs for sure.
And then obviously each and every week we talk about digital marketing. So digital marketing systems, you know, in one way, shape or form have probably been covered, right?
That's right. Digital marketing systems. And I would say that we even talk about it in a way of that overall digital consumer experience.
Well, there you go. I would recommend for anybody interested in one of those topics or anything else, they've also got some complimentary solutions on their website. But head over to their website, take a look at what they've got and what they're offering relative to CMS, CRM, digital marketing systems, kind of how all that is woven together in what they call their consumer experience platform. Find your way over to influencehealth.com.
Touch counterpoint. There are two sides to every story. Ready, fight! So this is the segment that's called Touch Point, Touch Counterpoint, where Reed and I face off around a particular controversial topic. And today we've talked a lot about quality and quality measurement and actually being transparent about it. So Reed, I was thinking maybe you and I can go head to head on the conversation or the question, does publishing quality metrics, measurements, actually inform anybody? Is there actual meaning in that data when we publish it online?
As it stands, no, not really. I think you can make the argument that the act of doing it helps inform people, you know, to the extent that, you know, you're not hiding anything, you're trying to be transparent, et cetera. Are they able to actually discern anything from your reporting and use that to make decisions? No.
I don't know. I would argue that there are some metrics that are very, very important for people when they're making decisions. We talked about in many episodes, and we've talked about just earlier today in this episode, the fact that publishing reviews of physicians through HCAHPS and CCAHPS scores on your website is actually useful for people. And there's studies that show physician profiles that have good reviews actually are useful for patients making a selection for that doctor. So I think there are some metrics that actually matter a lot. I would be remiss to say that all of them are informative, but I would say that the majority of them are helpful.
I think that's the exception, not the rule. So, I mean, we've figured out how to take a review of a physician and make that consumer friendly, i.e. stars. You know, we put stars next to their profile picture or whatever. But how does the consumer know that that's accurate? You know, that we're not just eliminating a lot of negative reviews, et cetera, et cetera. It's stuff that we're publishing. Everything's theoretically good. You know, we're not going to put a 2-star review up there, you know, next to a physician. The idea of quality metrics as a whole, I would venture to say if most people read through like core measures for an organization, like they don't even know what that stuff is. I don't know what that stuff is.
Well, yeah, that's the importance of us translating it and making it meaningful to the user, to the consumer. There's a couple of things that you said there that I want to address. So that's the first one is translation, making it accessible to people that are using it. And don't think that we're only talking about consumers. Again, we mentioned referring physicians could find some importance to that. When you're getting into provider payer negotiations, that could be very important. It could be also from a recruitment perspective. I think those things are very meaningful. And you have to translate your quality measure just a certain way online in order for those different audiences to find value and meaning from it. But the other thing you said, Reed, that kind of disturbed me, you're saying that because you're publishing them yourselves, you may be making that up, or you may be just filtering the good quality information up to the top and not the bad. I would say that because of the transparency with all these other third-party websites, CMS and AHRQ and all these other places, that you can't get away with that anymore. I remember 10 years ago, a hospital just created a quality award out of nowhere, and they put it up on their billboard, right? And they said, we won this quality award. That was not a real accreditation. You can't do that anymore.
Right. Although that'd be easier. Let's just create a bunch of awards and just put them on things. Isn't that kind of what we're doing anyway as an industry? No, I think, okay, so this one's going to be a hard one to argue one way or the other, because I think there's truth in both sides. We've got to get better about making this information more consumer friendly. So we've been able to do that. I think it's a little more straightforward, obviously, on the stars and reviews. You know, we've got star ratings and verbatim comments that go on physician profiles. Okay, well, that's pretty straightforward. I understand contextually what a star, you know, some star rating out of 5 means. 5's the best, you know, here are verbatim comments, here's what they say, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's all these other quality metrics. So let's take length of stay, for example. Like, that's a hard one. Not everybody's gonna have the same length of stay. It depends on what you're in for, depends on why, depends on, you know, other comorbidities that may be coupled around, you know, maybe you have diabetes and the other person doesn't. Maybe you don't, you know, it's not an apples to apples conversation. So it's hard to make that number meaningful, I guess, or predictable. You know, so it's like if we had a big deal up there that said like, hey, come on in, your average length of stay is 1.7 days.
Well, I think that's the very reason why we need marketing involved in quality communication to the various different audiences, because marketing can help to translate that into something meaningful. I mean, this is time immemorial in hospitals. Way back when, you know, 10 years ago, that's way back when for me, when I started in this space, physicians thought it would be really great to put out on websites information about the Da Vinci robot and how great it is, and just, you know, publish verbatim all of the copy that mm-hmm. the technology provider provided them. Mm-hmm. Well, what we found is that by having a nuance around contextualizing it for what our audiences found to be interesting, marketing helped tremendously. So just like healthcare marketing has to transform and change with the times, in this particular case, we have to do the same with quality communication. And that's the very role that marketing should play.
Yeah, I mean, that example right there is the ability to market the benefits, not the features.
Obviously, some of the quality measurements maybe are not that impactful or meaningful to consumers. I would agree with you on that. There may be just a very small segment of people that really would, you know, be interested in looking into erythrombiac therapy by the end of hospital day 2 measurement is. But there are certainly some people that might find that interesting. But sure, for the general population, we have to translate just the whole general quality message out to consumers that are saying, A, we're being transparent, and B, we're really trying to improve our quality if it's bad, or we're maintaining our quality if it's very high.
Yeah, absolutely. So maybe those of you that are listening, if you have a good execution of how you have communicated quality to the general public, we'd love to see it, hear about it. You know, hit us up online. All right, here we are at the Ask the Expert section of the podcast. And today, very fortunate to have Dave Thompson join us. Dave, I've known for, some years now. I don't know how long, 8, 10 years?
Probably 8, 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And originally, he and I met as I was working with a local healthcare system here in the Austin area called St. David's Healthcare, where he served as the vice president over quality for a number of years. And that's how he and I originally started working together as it related to the Baldrige process. Thanks for jumping on and chatting with me for a few minutes.
Well, thanks for having me, Reed. I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to the conversation.
So, Baldrige, as a whole, the Malcolm Baldrige Quality Award, am I saying that right?
Is
that
the right way to? Yeah, the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award.
There you go. So that's been around for a long time. And you know, make no mistake, this obviously has nothing specifically to do to healthcare. It's just that hospitals have started applying for that award some years ago, probably back around the turn of the millennia, right? Around 2000 or so.
That's right. Yeah. And actually, the award's been around. It was established by law back in 1987 and cranked up in 1988. It's a presidential award that recognizes role model organizations across the country in a variety of industries, as you indicated, Reed. Named after Malcolm Baldrige, who is a Secretary of Commerce who tragically died in a rodeo accident back in 1987. So they were looking for some way to recognize him. And so it was decided they were about to that time, the country was starting to see increased competition from Japan and the Asian front, specifically in the auto industry. And so this framework came out of the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And it's a award that historically had been presented in the Oval Office by the President of the United States. So it's pretty cool history behind it all.
For those that aren't, you know, extremely familiar, you know, what are we really evaluating at the end of the day?
I think organizations, you know, who have jumped into this foray, if you will, are looking to see if they can help their organizations become better and posture themselves through this self-assessment of answering 354 questions, great questions, that have changed over the years to help them accomplish their mission, improve results, and become more competitive. It includes 7 different categories, which are kind of basic building blocks for business: leadership, strategic planning, customer focus, which is where, you know, I think we want to hone in on, but then measurement, sure, the workforce, operations, and then finally results. So it's a really good self-assessment tool. Process includes submitting an application and getting a team of experts, if you will, objective folks, to provide feedback against these criteria questions, as they're called.
And so there are examiners, that's what you're talking about, where people actually that have a lot of times very little insight of your organization or even healthcare in general sometimes come in and evaluate, do site visits, obviously, if you get far enough down that track. But there aren't a whole lot of winners. There's a handful each year. Is that kind of fair to say? And I don't even mean healthcare. I just mean in general, right?
Yeah, in general, you know, the law allows for a number of recipients, but typically, you know, you see between 2 and 6, I think, okay, is the highest each year of companies that are recognized in a variety of sectors outside of healthcare, but including healthcare now.
And from a healthcare perspective, like we mentioned, I think you started seeing probably before then, but, you know, the first winners, you know, around 2000, right?
Right.
Give or take, as far as hospitals go. And to this point, about how many have won? Has there been a couple of dozen or not quite that many to this point?
We're getting close to a couple dozen. I think we're up to about 20 now over the last decade and a half. Not a lot, but, you know, so it's a very rigorous process. And so a lot of organizations take their time and use the assessment. Some don't even apply officially for the award, because it's really not about the award. It's about getting better and getting better results and improving their processes, but, you know, also understanding their customers better, which, as, you know, we've talked about over the years, I think, you know, these questions around social media became a criteria question 3 or 4 years ago with the onslaught of social media and how big data is being used to understand the consumer experience. So in the hospital setting, it's patients that we're dealing with. But how do you understand their requirements and their expectations?
Yeah, and so let's kind of jump into that a little bit. So you mentioned there's a number of sections, 7, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
So there's 7 portions of this application, so to speak, leadership and measurement and all those that you named. But the first one we saw, and I may have my dates off here, I'm kind of going from memory, but I want to say it was around 2012 when we first saw the reason, so to speak.
Yeah.
There's probably a reason before, but the reason for marketing to really get involved, and that was the addition of the actual words of social media being used.
Yeah.
And that was in category 3, which is voice of the customer. And it talked about how do you use social media, and I think it even specified and web-based tools to, you know, glean insights, if you will, from consumers. And then, and this is, I think, the point of the whole Baldrige process, what are you doing with that information to then better a process?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I think that was what was interesting, where everybody went, oh, huh. Because before it was just like, oh, yeah, I mean, we post some things on Facebook.
Well, or we do a satisfaction survey, you know, and those are retrospective. You know, when you think about filling out a survey, you know, even going to the car dealership, you know, it's kind of like, okay, you know, how did you do? But in the hospital settings, there was that. And then as value-based purchasing came into play, there was some incentivizing from the federal government, from a reimbursement perspective, to do better in your patient satisfaction. But as you alluded to, the Baldrige criteria started really teasing out customer focus, and understanding customer requirements has been there since the get-go. Because if you don't understand what your customers want,
right,
you know, then you're kind of out of luck. You asked Henry Ford what his consumers want, they would have said a faster horse. So you think about where, you know, the whole consumer experience now with the advent of smartphones and the access for banking, you know, the whole consumer experience has changed significantly. So the criteria questions are asking us, how are you tapping into that data? How are you selecting the data, not just Facebook likes, as you mentioned, but what are people saying about their experience that then organizations tie into another category of the Baldrige criteria in category 6 on process design. And this goes into, well, if customers really are getting frustrated with waiting, whether it's in an emergency room or in a doctor's office, what can we do proactively to change our processes based on that information that we're gleaning from the social media feedback that we're getting?
These tools change pretty rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
What it means on this year's application is maybe different than what it would mean if I applied next year. The functionality may be different of Facebook now versus then, or now all of a sudden we have a new rating and review site, or we're starting to see, you know, a lot more usage of things like Glassdoor, where employees are rating and reviewing their employer, you know, and some of those types of things. And so it's something that those that applied, you know, back in 2000, you know, didn't have to take into account. But with that in mind, what other areas? So we talk about voice of the customer, but what other areas are you starting to see, you know, the technology impact throughout the survey process or the application process that maybe, you know, it wasn't there before?
Yeah, I think, well, the criteria, once you begin to really understand it, it's, they're all interconnected. They're dependent on each other. So, you know, I'll give you a quick example. Leadership, you know, sets the direction with their mission, vision, values of an organization. You mentioned the workforce. So understanding, you know, some of the tools to tap into the engagement of the workforce. You know, a lot of people are using Studer Group as an example for understanding the employees as a customer base, if you will, but the workforce. So we do hourly rounding on on patients, but also, you know, rounding on employees. And so the criteria says, how do you select what the most important data elements are, number one, but then number two, what do you do with that data? And how are you aggregating it, looking for trends? How are you segmenting it by your different either patient populations or the doctors you work with or, you know, the workforce? So leadership uses that data, that whole data measurement is category 4, but then that then informs strategic planning, you know, for the organization thinking about, and actually the specific question is around how do you use social media data to identify and adapt to attract new markets, new customers, and create opportunities to expand and deepen your relationships with not only employees, but doctors and patients. Of course, you know, it's not the hotel where patients want to come back, but, you know, you think about that word of mouth that you and I talked about, you know, years ago. So that's, those are just some really quick examples besides then the process redesign. So you take something that's in a customer focus category and you say, that's linked to leadership, strategic planning, your data, your workforce, and your process improvement, which hopefully then yields the last category, which is results.
Yeah, and I guess that results and measurement piece of it really applies to everything in the application like you're talking about. I mean, you know, with everything kind of being intertwined. In the digital space, we have the ability to measure and, you know, pull data, you know, probably more so than in some other areas even.
I think about, you know, and you and I talked about this during our application process, the number of advocates, the percentage of advocates, you know, the people who are not just coming to your page to or your site for information, but what types of information are they trying to glean? What types of information are they sharing? But I think about how, you know, every time I get on Facebook or, you know, one of these shopping sites, they seem to read my mind. And I know there's some guys in some garages somewhere in California that create these algorithms, but they know what I've been searching for. So if I'm a cancer patient and I'm looking for information about a very specific disease element or options or clinical trials, it's important for the healthcare team in your local hospital to understand that about you. I even think about back in, I want to say two decades ago, Ritz-Carlton and Four Seasons, they had, I called them primitive sophisticated systems, you know, because they used pieces of paper. And every time they interacted with, you know, someone staying in their hotels, they would take, just jot down a few notes about their interaction with you, give that to a guest historian, and that was captured in a database that then was shared whenever you made arrangements to stay in one of their hotels worldwide. But now you fast forward 20 years and you think about where we're going to be 5 and 10 years down the road with AI and all that stuff. It's going to be amazing.
And so now it's not so much, you know, what did they do in the hospital or in this case, the hotel, but it's all the other things we know about these people, what they did everywhere else before they got there.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see, you know, how a lot of that then filters back into, you know, this award process or the application process and the ultimate award, I guess.
That's right.
So, you know, as people are looking at this, marketing people specifically and the communication folks specifically, like what kind of tips or advice can you give? You know, how best can they help the team and their organization as they kind of make their way down this path?
When we started on the journey, you know, a decade and a half ago, you know, so 15 years ago, the CEO at the time of the organization pulled a small group of us together and said, I just want you to, you know, I came from an organization who won this on the state level because most states have a state program that's aligned with the Baldrige National Program. And actually, that's now a requirement that you win the state's highest award before applying at the national level. His comment was so insightful. He said, I want you guys to become familiar with the questions. And, you know, we're not going to talk necessarily about the award because it is about getting better. You know, we want to get better as an organization from our organizational culture. We want to be passionate about achieving a vision. And so that's the beginning point is just what are some good questions that we need to ask? And what do we know and what do we don't know about our customer bases and our market segments and the nuances about different demographics that we may not be sensitive to? And how can we leverage all of our data elements, whether it's, you know, the nurse at the bedside or, you know, getting a review on Yelp or some of the other things that you're more familiar with? But how can we tap into that more purposefully, I guess I would say, more proactively rather than retrospectively, to be able to skate to where the puck is going to be, as Gretzky talked about.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of like, where's this going and how fast is it moving? I think marketing and communication people are right at that tip of the spear where they're out in the community, they're talking to people. And so I would say, number one, just you can download some of these basic questions from the Baldrige website and begin understanding the questions and then benchmarking other organizations. Who's the best at doing this out there? And are there any ways that we can, in the industry, it's called benchmarking, but how can we do that better, you know, in our organization and be the champion, if you will, of the voice of the customer for their organizations? And I think that that's a very important role for the marketing communications folks to tap into.
Appreciate your time. You know, maybe we can, those that are interested in tracking Dave down, maybe you've got additional questions or would like to visit with him a little bit further, you can find him over at ThirdGateConsulting.com, ThirdGateConsulting.com. We'll have a link to his LinkedIn profile and encourage you to go seek him out if this is something that piques your interest. So, Dave, we appreciate it.
Thank you, Reed. Appreciate the time and look forward to future conversations for sure.
Okay, we're coming to the end of the podcast, Reed. That was a really good conversation that we just listened to. Thank you for doing that and for meeting with him. Dave is a smart guy and shared some great insights.
Yeah, smart guy. So be sure to track him down online and give him a little love if you could.
Mm-hmm. Also, Reed, I want to make sure that before we get into the recommendations, to let people know that we're coming up on the end of the year, and Reed and I are planning a very special episode for the final season of, or I guess the final episode of the year, which is our year-end review. And we alluded to this in last week's podcast. Well, this week we are actually going to be putting out a survey that we're asking our users. We'll be tweeting it out through our Touchpoint Podcast Twitter account. We'll put it up on LinkedIn as well, and we'll probably send it out through our own personal accounts as well. We want to ask you, the audience members, to vote on some of your favorite things, like your favorite episode, your favorite guest, maybe even, you know, who do you think has won the Touchpoint Touch Counterpoint arguments collectively over the year? You know, I like to think it's me, but you might think it's you, Reed. I'm not sure.
Of course it was me. Of course.
But and there'll be some other fun questions that we're going to ask and all that. And it's going to be a fun episode, too. So look forward to that. Make sure to have your podcast set up to download in between Christmas and New Year's, because that's when we're going to drop that episode.
Very cool. Time for a few recommendations. Or not a few, I guess two recommendations.
All right. What do you got, Reed? You go first.
All right. So I'm going to recommend an app. It is called Goat, G-O-A-T. Don't know why it's called Goat. There is a picture of a goat on the little button, the little app thing when you download it or whatever.
Okay.
But what it is it it's basically a marketplace for shoes. So I know that comes as a shocker for people who know me. But it allows you to buy and sell shoes. If you got the most recent pair of Yeezys or something and you want to make a few bucks, you could put them on there and sell them. But it's a cool way to go through, find cool shoes, and actually order them. You can actually make an offer on a pair of shoes if you'd like. So if they want $100, you could offer them 80, you know, that kind of thing. But anyway, it's a cool UI. It's a really clean, really slick design.
Yeah, I was like, what is that app, Goat? And immediately I thought of the Goat Simulator game that's out there. I'm not sure if you've heard of that. I thought that's what you're going to be recommending. But this is a place where you can buy and sell shoes.
This would actually have been a better idea, where you could actually like hire goats. You know how you can like get them to like come clean up your land or whatever, you know? So that
to eat your old shoes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go.
I'm going to download that app for sure, definitely, and take a look at that. So I am going to recommend an app to listen to podcasts. I'm not sure if I've done this before, Reed, but if you are on Apple iOS and you're listening to podcasts through the built-in podcast app that Apple's made, you know how bad of an experience it is. I don't know about you, Reed, but I actually have been trying out different podcast apps to kind of keep up with my podcasting lifestyle, because, you know, now that I'm a podcaster, I have a lifestyle around listening to podcasts. So I'm listening to one that's actually called Casts. Oh, are you familiar with it?
No.
It costs a little bit. It's like $2.99 to download, but it really has a really nice, clean interface. It operates just like any podcast aggregator, so to speak, but it's really convenient. It has a lot of great features. First of all, you can sync when you're connected, and obviously listen to when you're offline. But you can also indicate on which app how you want it to be synced. So let's say one podcast you want to hear every episode, then it will just automatically download the new episode. But then others, if you want to just intermittently just pull one every now and then, that's a great way to do that. It also has obviously all the things that you need, including the ability to play it twice as fast.
Oh, nice.
The ability to, you know, to a sleeper on it if you're listening to it before you go to bed, which I sometimes do. It has a variety of different features. You can even broadcast it to other devices. Like, I could sit here and broadcast it to any Bluetooth-enabled device, like my Alexa or what have you. So it's really kind of handy. and convenient.
Very nice.
It's called Casts, and I would definitely recommend it. And it's got a nice, easy interface.
Cool. That is a good one. That is a very, very good one. Well, we have come to the end of episode 44 on quality, and I'm not sure I would have ever believed I would have said that several years ago. So look how far we've come. Awesome. Thank you again for all the support. Thanks for listening. Be sure to tell a friend. And until next week, he's Chris Boyer, and I'm Reed Smith.